Welcome to Lena Live. This is Julian Lampert, and clearly you are not hearing Lena this time since she has a lovely female voice, and I am her producer and happen also to be her son. On this program, we're going to focus on the life and art of a Russian composer named Alexander Scriabin. Alexander Scriabin is not as well known as other Russian composers, of course, like Tchaikovsky, who is probably the most well known. He, being Mr. Scriabin, is a more obscure figure. However, the work of Scriabin is so extraordinary and all the more unbelievable because of how short of a life he lived and how much he was able to achieve in really not even his entire lifetime, but specifically within the last 7 to 10 years of his life, he forever changed the world of music. And he did so in establishing a certain system of harmony. And this is a more specific subject that we certainly don't have to get into details that call for some knowledge of harmony and musical specifics. We don't need to get into that, but the reason that I do bring it up is because the explosion that he created in the world of music resulted in a new way of composing. And he achieved this before, not really that much, not that long before, but about 5-6 years prior to the work of an Austrian composer named Arnold Schoenberg, who was an incredible revolutionary. And he is, to some extent, he's much more well-known and more established than Scriabin. But what is not enough appreciated and hasn't even really been documented enough in the history books, even though it is very well documented musically in the work of Scriabin, is the fact that he beat Schoenberg in creating this new way of composing music, which, and this is the only specific term that I will get into, he abolished the key signature. In other words, he got rid of the old way of assigning a piece of music a key signature. We think of Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 in C minor. We think of Brahms' Second Symphony in D major. So these key signatures, as they are called, D major, C minor, G major, A flat minor, these are ways of establishing a tonal center, a kind of, you might think of it as a point of gravity around which all of the music activity within a piece revolves. Scriabin was the first to get rid of this key signature, the idea of having to use a key signature. And one of the principal ideas that is misunderstood about that fact is that Scriabin got rid of the tonal center, the idea of having a tonal center altogether. And that actually is absolutely not true. In fact, that was one of Scriabin's most incredible achievements, something that Schoenberg actually was not able to do, and the composers after him, being to get rid of the key signature, but still maintaining a very, very strong focal point of tonality. It's a kind of a feat that that's better listened to rather than getting into a huge explanation, although the explanations are quite interesting. We can think of Scriabin as a figure somewhat similar to Einstein, in fact. And it's interesting that in science and in the arts, there were certain similar trends occurring in the early part of the 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century. And we have to be careful about making parallels that are too literal between music and any other field. But there are certain parallels that are very interesting. And the fact that someone like Einstein and someone like Scriabin, together with people like Stravinsky and Schoenberg, Max Planck, Schrödinger, et cetera, the fact that these figures would all live within a decade of each other is really quite fascinating, because they achieved certain similar feats. And I'm not a scientist. I can't appreciate enough what Einstein achieved. But from the amateur understanding that I have, the idea that he made a revolution that made a fundamental change from the way that physics existed after Isaac Newton's day is very, very similar to what occurred in music. Because before Scriabin's time, even though there was already a very strong tendency to go in the direction of getting rid of tonality, or if not getting rid of tonality, let's say getting rid of the key signature, there definitely was a direction in that manner. But the way that Scriabin had done that, and really did it single-handedly, especially considering the fact that he did not come from a Western country, but he came from Russia, which had an extremely young classical music tradition that began with Mikhail Glinka, whose prime was in the 1840s and early 50s, 1850s. When we go back to Glinka and we come to Scriabin, who was active from the late 1880s until his death in 1915, we have just really a few decades of Russian music history within classical music, whereas in France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Holland, and other countries, Western countries, they had classical music traditions that were 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years old. So Russia is very unique in that sense, that within a very short period of time, and this doesn't just apply to music, it applies to many parts of a civilization. Within a very short period of time, Russia made some really extraordinary advances in the sciences and in the arts. And Scriabin was truly the focal point in this history. Let's hear one of his most famous pieces, written, in fact, when he was no more than 15 years old. This is the Etude in C sharp minor, Opus 2, number 1. Thank you. We just heard the Etude in C sharp minor, Opus 2, number 1, by Russian composer Alexander Scriabin. That was a recording which I made in actually the home of Scriabin. His home was converted into a museum in Moscow not long after his death, and in fact, the entire world has an extraordinary tradition and heritage of the, as we call it, home museums that were established by the governments of the countries where the respective composers came from. Mozart's birthplace is well known, as is Beethoven's. And in Scriabin's home, there is a concert series, and there are many, many concerts that take place there throughout the year. And it's really a very beautiful place, very wonderfully preserved. What's really unbelievable is that this piece that we just heard was written by a 15-year-old. And we think of Mozart as being the most famous prodigy in the history of music. But we should not underrate this kind of achievement that we just listened to, because this piece has an air about it of someone who had already lived a very long life and is actually in a mature age. We often associate music by young people as being very energetic, very uplifting, and extremely energizing. And Scriabin certainly wrote a lot of that kind of music, and not only in his youth, but throughout his life. But it's incredibly unusual in the history of music for any composers. Very unusual to find a piece that is as introverted and as, I would say, that has an air of this incredible wisdom and this deep sense of romanticism that's highly, as I said, highly introverted for someone at such a young age. That's incredibly unique. So we don't need to go beyond that piece to appreciate the genius of this man. What's also extraordinary is that he lived only 43 years. And in his 43 years, he had three very distinctly different periods of music activity. I like to think of it more as two periods, because the leap that he made from his middle period to his last period is a much, much bigger one, just a giant leap, almost like, I would say, a leap of a few million light years into the future, compared to the leap from his first period to the middle period, which was also quite large, but not as big as from his middle to late period. And that's quite unbelievable, considering not only how young he was when he died, but he was 43 years old when he died, but he was active as a professional composer maybe not even 30 years. Even Beethoven lived a longer life than Scriabin. Beethoven lived until he was 57, and he died in 1827. So again, just really just a few decades before Scriabin was born. Johannes Brahms lived a longer life than Scriabin did. I think Brahms was 64 or 65. when he died. So just an extraordinarily short life. And there is some speculation about his death, but the official story is that he had a fairly minor infection on his lip that he neglected. And this infection eventually killed him. And it's so ironic that he died at the time of this explosive, not only explosive last period of his life, of his musical creations, but it actually seemed in a very eerie and mysterious way. It seemed as though he actually lived a very, very long life, considering the giant musical journey that he took, beginning with the piece that we just heard, the C sharp minor etude, and going to the next piece that we will hear, which is called Vers la Flamme. And that's in French, meaning toward the flame. Scriabin was extremely inspired by flames, and he was constantly possessed by fiery visions. And I'm not saying that in any way whatsoever as a cliche. He literally was fascinated and totally haunted, and as I said, obsessed with flames. One of the symphonies that he wrote has a subtitle of Poem of Fire. So this piece, this next piece that we will hear, we're going to be jumping towards the end of his life, to about 1912, 1913, when this piece was written. And this again is a recording from the home museum of Scriabin, where I recorded this piece. Vers la Flamme by Alexander Scriabin. Thank you. We just heard Toward the Flame by Russian composer Alexander Scriabin. Incredibly wild music, and as I said earlier, it is hard to believe that the same individual who wrote the first piece that we heard, the C sharp minor, Etude Opus 2, number 1, was the same author as of the piece that we just heard. This also gives us an idea of what the human mind and human soul and intellect is capable of, that the passage of time is not necessarily an object. In other words, with someone as ingeniously equipped as Scriabin, it is not necessary to wait 30, 40, 50, 60 years before achieving an incredible enlightenment and just this unthinkable inspiration that was not only powerful for his own work and his own art, but happened also to change the world of music forever, as I said in the beginning of the program. Let's take a brief break and listen to a word from our sponsor, Calvary Hospital of New York City.
Dear Calvary Hospital, James Lee was a true hero. Saving lives was something he always wanted to do, whether as a paratrooper for the 82nd Airborne or as a New York City fireman. They called him Jimmy. I was proud to call him Dad. But when terminal illness ravaged his body, this man's man knew that this was one life that could not be saved. Not even by me, an experienced nurse. It just wasn't fair that he had to suffer like this. But then Calvary stepped in. You relieved his enormous pain and not only gave him the peace and comfort he deserved, but you also gave me and my family a chance to enjoy his final days, smiling and laughing, together one last time. How can we ever forget what you mean to us? Yours truly, Colleen Lee.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital, where life continues. Call us at 718-518-2000. Thank you.
We're back with our program, Lean Alive, and I'm producer Julian Lampert. We just heard from our sponsor, Calvary Hospital. We're extremely honored to be sponsored by this great institution of New York City. And please be sure to check out Calvary Hospital online at www.calvaryhospital.org. That's all one word, calvaryhospital.org. We're talking about Russian composer Alexander Scriabin, an incredible visionary genius who lived no more than 43 years and lived just across the bridge from the late 19th to early 20th century. And to appreciate Scriabin in a more historical perspective of Russian music, I'd like to examine just briefly, very briefly, the influence of Tchaikovsky on Scriabin, because most often history books are flooded with associating Scriabin's first inspiration as coming from Chopin. And that is certainly true. There's no question that Chopin played a giant role in Scriabin's creative life in the first part of his creative period. And in fact, there is even a letter where Scriabin writes that he slept with Chopin's music, printed sheet music, underneath his pillow. But I feel that that influence is highly overrated. And in fact, I think that he was much more affected by Tchaikovsky. And it's very interesting because Scriabin's voice and individualism was so innovative that he never sounded like anyone other than himself. And yet we can smell, so to speak, the influence of Tchaikovsky in a very strong way, but in a way that's strongly disguised. And it's disguised by Scriabin's own highly individual language. But we can very sharply hear the incredible inspiration that he derived from Tchaikovsky, and that inspiration can be explained as being this, what we often associate Russian art with being, the Russian artistic image as being not just very passionate, that's almost cliche, but even more than that, there's a certain nervousness, a kind of unpredictable tension, this chronic state of nervousness that never leaves a human being. It's almost like being infected by this intense nervousness. And I'd like to briefly demonstrate that from a piece of Tchaikovsky. This is a very, very short fragment from his opera, The Queen of Spades. And this opera is actually one of the greatest operas ever conceived by anyone. But this extremely short scene that's no more than about a 1.5 minute long is an absolutely perfect illustration. This 1.5 minute illustration of a giant period of Russian history. It's one of these unique examples where if someone asked me to summarize in a minute and a half the entire scope of Russian artistic history, this little fragment would be the one I would choose. Let's listen to it.
Молчи, она мертва, а тайны не узнал я.
О, мертва, о чем ты говоришь?
Сбылось, она мертва, а тайны не узнал я.
Да, мертва, о боже, и это сделал ты.
Я смерти не хотел ее, я только знать хотел три карты.
Так вот, зачем ты здесь, не для меня? Ты знать хотел три карты, не я тебе была нужна, а карты, о боже, боже мой, и я его любила, и за него погибла. Чудовище, убийца,
So as you could hear, just absolutely fiery, unstoppable, maniacal nervousness. We just heard a fragment from The Queen of Spades by Peter Tchaikovsky. That's actually a scene that concludes the first act of the opera, and we heard that in a performance by the Bolshoi Opera conducted by Yuri Simonov. It's a historic recording. And as I was saying earlier, this nervous drive is the engine that drives Scriabin's music. And it's a nervous passion, which to some degree we can even say is a little bit even stronger than Chopin's. Although many would disagree with me there, and some would claim that I'm treading on some dangerous ground by claiming that. But nonetheless, I feel that way because, as Vladimir Horowitz brilliantly put it, he said that Scriabin is always just a little bit overboard. And that feeling of being just a bit overboard, taking it already so over the top that it's almost like we're witnessing, this is an extreme image, but it's almost like you happen to be a witness to someone who just almost falls off the cliff and by some miracle thankfully does not fall off that cliff. That's what Scriabin's music is like. And Tchaikovsky was the first composer in Russia's history to go into such extremes of human emotion. Coming back to Scriabin, he was a visionary in another respect that's quite fascinating. Alexander Scriabin was the first composer in all of music history to conceive of a multimedia performance. Not long after the birth of the light bulb, and when I say the birth of the light bulb, I don't mean the very first time it was created, because it was not created at first by Thomas Edison, as most of us think. The light bulb actually was conceived long before Edison, and I unfortunately cannot remember the names in Europe of the scientists who built prototypes of it, but Edison, as far as I can remember, was indeed the first to come up with the most practical light bulb. In other words, one that could be manufactured and used on a mass level, that had a lot of efficiency. And not long after Edison's light bulb, Alexander Scriabin had the idea of creating a light projection system where different colored light bulbs would be projected onto a white screen during the performance of certain of his works. He even conceived of a chart. He created a chart where he equated certain key signatures, the topic that we discussed briefly in the beginning of this program. He equated certain key signatures, certain tonalities with certain colors. And in fact, he created a chart where he made very explicit relationships between these certain colors and these certain tonalities. Very, very fascinating. And that makes him all the more an incredible visionary, because little did Scriabin know that multimedia would be one of the driving forces of technology in the latter part of the 20th century, not to even begin to mention our century, where multimedia is on fire these days. And so his innovation is really could not be overestimated. for one other important reason. And that reason is that Russia has in many ways been up to his time, and also up to the first half of the 20th century. This is already going beyond his life, but more importantly, prior to his life, Russia was really haunted by darkness, by a lot of tragedy, and really every single country has had its dark periods, and there are countries even now that are going through these powerful transformations. And Scriabin was alive during a critical time in Russia's history where Russia was going through its own very painful transformation. The reason that this is significant is because Scriabin is the only Russian composer in that country's history whose music goes beyond, very far beyond, the darkness of the culture that he comes from. In fact, not only does it go beyond it, but there is this unbelievable blinding light in Scriabin's music that no other Russian composer had. And in fact, we can certainly say one could argue that no other composer in the 20th century had this incredible positive energy, this incredibly life-affirming energy that was so, as he would put it, unbearably beautiful. There are letters where he writes about being tortured by bliss and being overcome with these incredible fits of inspiration, of the glory of the beauties of life, the glory being so intense that it was unbearable. And he was certainly thought of as being quite crazy by his contemporaries. But the point is that he is really incredibly unique in that no other country, especially countries that were doing much, much better than Russia was at that time, there was really no country that produced a figure that was so, that transcended his own culture so incredibly far and beyond his time. that, in some ways, that is really the very thing that makes Scriabin unique above all. Let's once again hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with our program about Russian composer Alexander Scriabin.
Dear Calvary Hospital, my dad was at the end of his life, suffering from pancreatic cancer. I knew there was only one place that could relieve his pain and ours as well, Calvary Hospital. His wish was to die at home, so it was Calvary Home Hospice that provided Dad with the quality of life he deserved, filled with exceptional comfort and warmth. He passed on with dignity and grace, and we were all there with him. A year later, my mom needed the same Calvary care. And once again, Calvary's expert home hospice staff was there for us. My parents gave me unqualified love their entire lives. There was no better way for me to return this love than with Calvary's care. Yours truly, Deborah DiGregorio.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Our world-renowned hospice program brings our expert end-of-life care right into your home. Call us at 718-518-2465.
We're back with our program, Lena Live. This is Julian Lampert, the producer, and we're speaking about Alexander Scriabin. an incredible Russian composer, who was actually a classmate of Sergei Rachmaninoff, no more, no less. Rachmaninoff went on to become quite a bit more famous than Scriabin, but Rachmaninoff lived a much longer life, and Rachmaninoff actually died as an American citizen in 1943. But they both studied with the same teacher, Nikolai Zverev, who was one of the, possibly the certainly the finest piano teacher in Moscow, of a teacher of, in terms of bringing up artists from a very young age. He was really the only teacher who had done that. And his his students actually lived with him, so that his home was really like a school, and he nurtured his students for quite a number of years. So Scriabin comes from that tradition. Let's hear another piece by him. This is actually possibly his most famous piece. This is the Etude Pathétique in D sharp minor, opus 8, number 12, by Alexander Scriabin. We just heard the Pathétique Etude in D sharp minor, opus 8, number 12, by Alexander Scriabin. That was a performance of mine at Payne Hall, Harvard University, some years ago. And as I said, that's probably his most recognizable piece that he wrote, and it's from his middle period, written in the late 1890s, not long after the death of Peter Tchaikovsky, who died in 1893. I have a very personal feeling also about this composer, because for one thing, I performed at his home, which was a very special experience, but together with that, my own musical upbringing is very much tied into the music of Scriabin. My mother was quite close to a member of Scriabin's family when we lived in Russia. This is going back to the 20th century, although I don't want to date ourselves too dramatically. That was actually not that long ago. And my mother spent a lot of time at the home/museum of this composer, where at that time they not only had concerts, but they also arranged for devotees of Scriabin's music to have access to certain very, very rare recordings that were presented at the museum. And in fact, there were even concerts where people would gather together not to hear someone live, but actually listen to recordings because they were so, so precious. And I'm speaking above all the recordings of the incredible genius pianist Vladimir Sofronitsky, who definitely was the greatest interpreter of Scriabin. Certainly Vladimir Horowitz, the legendary pianist, was a precious, precious defender and interpreter of Scriabin's music. But Sofronitsky has gone largely underrated, actually not underrated, that's not the right term, not recognized enough, because he, for the main reason that Sofronitsky stayed in Russia, whereas Vladimir Horowitz immigrated to the West and he really became a star in the West, but not Sofronitsky, who stayed in Russia. And he actually did not perform that often, and he did not travel outside of Russia often at all. He was married to Scriabin's daughter, and one of their children was a gentleman who married a lady by the name of Irina Sofronitska, who is a dear friend of ours and who did an extraordinary service to Russia's culture by preserving the traditions of Alexander Scriabin through her efforts as the curator of the museum, which is in the home of the composer. Irina Sofronitska worked with Scriabin's daughter, Elena Sofronitska, and together they invested their blood, their souls, into the preservation of this extraordinary composer, so that we are able now in the 21st century to absorb and appreciate him. We are coming to the end of Lena Live. It is 56 minutes after the hour, and I really enjoyed speaking to you about the music of one of my favorite composers, Alexander Scriabin. And I leave you with the thought that when we try to seek light or to seek inspiration or enlightenment, we do not need an external influence or an external source, but we can find it within ourselves. Maybe not in the same way that Mr. Scriabin did, but he certainly demonstrates to us that we will never find a brighter light than within ourselves. Thank you for joining me. This was Lena Live. I'm Julian Lampert, your producer. And we'll see you next time. Let's end on a few notes of Scriabin's First Symphony.